Hello and welcome to the latest episode in the Enterprise Times Security Podcast Series. My name is Ian Murphy. My guests today are Simon Schasser, Chief Revenue Officer, NTT Limited, and John Maynard, Vice President, Global Security Sales at Cisco. We're going to take a look at Secure by Design. What is it? How do you do it? What does it mean for your business?
Thank you. Chief Revenue Officer of NTT Limited Security Division. I'm responsible for the cybersecurity go-to-market practice and the sales and marketing for the security business.
John Maynard, I run global security sales for Cisco across our portfolio of security offerings, whether it be endpoint, network, cloud security, email, helping our customers with digital transformation and securing that move.
Let's start with defining secure by design. What does it actually mean?
Secure by design is about building in security from the design of a solution, making sure that we are bringing together the technology, but also the business processes, the people and services to design a solution from the beginning with security in mind and making sure that that outcome is secure.
From my perspective, the security industry and frankly, the IT industry have been building and designing architectures with security as an afterthought. Security architectures have been bolted on after the fact, designing data center estates, campus networking, cloud security now, and secure by design is making sure security is thought about upfront, designed upfront, and built in, not bolted on.
But one of the challenges here is technology stacks. Most of the software and hardware technology we use is not in its first generation. We're not talking about greenfield environments. As a result, we spend our life trying to add things to secure and work out the problems. How do we do that in such a way that we reduce the number of vulnerabilities that we see and actually give customers confidence?
That's a good question. It's about effectively evolving the security posture of your environment and also protecting and looking at what is critical to protect. As you look through multiple versions, structures, and architectures you've got within your environment, you know, what is critical? So, for example, for a utilities organization, it may be their IP and maybe their clients that they may want to protect and the data that's associated to it. For a manufacturing organization, it may be their plants and business continuity and making sure that they evolve those security controls and ensure they've got the right services and business processes that effectively makes that fully secure and secure by design as an ultimate outcome.
I second that, Simon. These IT environments, these security environments across many, many industries have been built up piecemeal over many, many years. It's not like you can go in and rip and replace in one big transformation. This is a journey that we need to work with our customers and clients on to effectively build security in, whether it's a refresh, whether it's a redesign, making sure that security works with the existing technology and security controls that may exist, integrate with what we have, but take our customers on a more secure journey with a risk profile and a risk evaluation of addressing the highest risks first, essentially driving that integration and moving to a higher security and higher risk position over time. This is why we need to have a longer term view of how we get there. And that can only be done with integration and security built in.
Let's deal with that risk part first. One of the challenges for a lot of organizations is understanding what their risk profile is. Is it down to a poor choice of software at some point in the past? Is it down to a lack of spending on the security team? Is it a lack of skills or a lack of staff? At a board level, risk is a word they understand because it means everything to the business. But matching risk and IT has become quite a challenge. Where do we begin to help people and what can we get them to do about it?
That's a fantastic question because the maturity of customers, whether it's around the world, whether it's within specific industries, whether you look at different sizes of organizations, it varies dramatically. We've got cloud-first organizations. We've got more traditional organizations that have been built up over many, many years. Effectively, what you see is a very wide variation in those organizations that know where their biggest risks are. What devices do they have? What is the status of those devices? And when I talk about devices, we're talking laptops, mobile devices, servers, anything that can effectively host data and be used for computing power. Many organizations don't even know what they have. They don't even know the state of it. They don't even know what it's being used for. They don't know whether there's crown jewels, the IP that Simon was talking about. Does that reside on John's laptop? Is it on a server in a back room? Is it backed up? these questions, they're fundamental, foundational questions that the security organization, the chief risk officer, is unable to answer. We're still dealing with this complexity of organizations where you don't have full visibility, you don't have full asset inventory, you don't have full vulnerability information across infrastructure, across applications. Everyone talks about the next zero day that's going to hit them, and that is a concern. But most breaches leverage vulnerabilities that have been around for many, many years that just haven't been patched.
And if I may just jump in, what I'd say, John, is that one of the things that entities are known for is our services expertise. One of the aspects we provide is around our advisory, looking at not just the deployment methods around how they're looking at their information, data and architecture, but also around the frameworks and methodologies they've got to adhere to from a regulatory point of view. We do that from an advisory point of view because Secure by Design isn't something you can buy off the shelf. It's not a box. It's effectively an evolutionary advisory engagement that helps a client move forward all of their cyber posture where they need to around their risk profiles. Looking at risk, you've got to quantify that risk, right? As you say, the whole architecture has started to evolve. It's now access from everywhere and every device, and information is flowing in different methods. That means that the threat landscape is very broad. A network vulnerability is probably not the primary source of attacks. You know, most attacks these days occur through unpatched applications or through other vulnerabilities of phishing and malware. It is about looking at all of those aspects within your complete environment. That helps.
It does, but it also raises some interesting challenges. If I go back to the late 1990s, I can remember having a Nokia communicator, and my ability to work on the road over mobile networks was exciting. We've had this connection everywhere, support your mobile workforce idea for quite a while. But if we can't understand the devices they're using, if we can't secure how they access, we can't provide them with a trusted environment. What steps do we need to be taking to fix that?
Ian, what you're driving at there is the fact that we've got this foundation of complexity that we've been talking about. What we're doing now is we're layering on more complexity. The CISO, the security teams, the risk office are dealing with fragmented, complex IT and security estates today that they have to dramatically simplify through integration, automation, orchestration, through some of the services that Simon mentioned that NTT drives. But we're building complexity in, and Simon's point, we're expanding the risk surface. So your Nokia device expanded the risk surface many, many years ago. The iPhones of today or the iPads, the bring-your-own-devices, the proliferation of IoT across the environments that these enterprises and government entities are using today is just dramatically expanding the attack surface. This is why when we think about secure by design, it is reducing complexity. We are talking about a platform-first approach where native integration is prioritized to simplicity of user experience and the security operations analysts, for example. We have to give them time back. We have to drive operational simplification because these environments are only going to get more complex. The attack surface has expanded exponentially, and COVID and the work from home paradigm is a prime example of that attack surface expanding exponentially. You've got hundreds of thousands of employees in these organizations working from home. We've got devices that we don't know being connected to the IP backbone of these organizations. These are fundamental weaknesses of the organization if security is not thought about right up front and part of an integrated platform approach.
And expanding on thinking about the security up front, I'll go into the convergence of networking and security controls and how they're coming together to deal with that remote access transformation we're seeing. Think about security building in from the beginning. If you were to build a manufacturing plant today for manufacturing vehicles, for example, you've got a lot of upstream and downstream dependencies beyond just taking a component and bolting other components to it to come up with a finished product. You've got everything from a sales site, which is actually selling and configuring the customization of that vehicle, for example, all the way down to the supply chain around those ECUs and light bulbs and key fobs that need to be shipped from multiple parts of the world. They're all interconnected from a network perspective to that supply chain and that manufacturing chain. So building a manufacturing plant and making sure you produce X volume of whatever it is you're producing every year, you've now got to think about the security aspects around how you get that inbound demand, how you then take inbound demand into a build cycle. then how your supplier components are connected to that. It just can't be bolted on. You can't just think about the security aspects afterwards, because it has to be architected from the beginning. Maybe that's a long answer. That's just to give you an example around how you have to think about secure by design and bringing it at the beginning of an architectural solution or outcome you're trying to solve.
When I look at the industry, I see a lot of people trying to solve this with a single technology and spread it everywhere. Let's take SD-WAN. If I look around, people are promoting SD-WAN as a solution to all of those connection points. But in reality, SD-WAN is incredibly powerful in the data center, in the systems I own at the core. It's not that applicable when I get to those edge points because they're constantly moving and changing. Where does SD-WAN sit as a solution technology here?
We've seen networking and security come together over many, many years. Campus networking and security, whether it's what we've seen with software-defined networking and how security is fundamental to securing the campus, they came together, but we've still really had very separate network operations teams, security operations teams with their own remits. What we're finding with SD-WAN and the needs that customers have around effectively branch transformation, remote office transformation, they're really trying to drive on the networking side. They've been backhauling traffic from these local branches, these remote offices, to the central campus data center to be able to break out to the internet. What they're really saying is, I'm giving these remote offices internet connectivity. I want to go directly to these cloud applications or directly to the internet. So I'm providing internet breakout directly from these offices, and I want to improve the application experience. I want predictable voice, cloud, and other access to these applications. I want to optimize for multi-cloud. I need to have the same experience if I go to Microsoft or GCP or AWS or SaaS applications. I need the ability to drive visibility of how I'm accessing these applications, where the applications are going, where these users are going. I need to be able to have that analytics so I can route traffic, I can look at assurance and make sure that the traffic path is optimized for those applications. There are more critical applications that I maybe want to prioritize. In doing that, I want to drive operational simplification. All of that on the networking side. Then you say, oh, hang on a minute, I've got users breaking out directly to the internet. I need to put security at the cloud edge. Some customers are saying, well, I don't want to put it at the cloud edge. I will deploy the full stack of security controls at the branch. Giving customers the flexibility to deploy at the branch or deploy in the cloud, I need the same security stack that I had on the campus, cloud-delivered firewall, IPS, advanced malware protection, URL filtering, everything like that I need in the cloud. I need that to be fully featured, fully functional, and I need it to be integrated with how I think about networking, but then how I think about on-premise security. I can't have a different way of looking at my cloud security versus my on-prem security. I need to drive that holistic view of the business, whether it's cloud delivered or it's traditional on-premise.
There's a challenge there for a number of organizations. They don't have the skill set to do that holistic view across on-premise and cloud systems. Maybe this is where the SOC comes in. Simon, if I look at some of the services NTT has been talking about recently, the SOC seems to be evolving from being a support service to now being much more tightly integrated with client security teams.
Just following on from John's point and answering your question, you've got this momentous shift where the secure access service edge, which SD-WAN is a component of, same as firewall and cloud access, all coming together. So the convergence of networking and security, that's promoting this remote access and having all of those security capabilities within each office. And each office these days is a remote worker in the COVID-19 environment. If you think about what's been going on, you've had probably a one-to-many ratio of lots of people still behind a campus architectural design, now moving out. You've got now multiple campuses of connection. That's driving all these additional security controls, multiple volumes of adverse events. These are security incidents or notifications of false positives where organizations are struggling to deal with the pure volume of vulnerabilities because they've now gone from 3 or 4 branches to maybe 3 to 4,000 where they've now got all these remote workers. where clients are looking for support on is how do we support them with managing their security incident and event management, providing that additional SOC support. NTT provides that sort of extensibility to a client or enterprise's existing SOC infrastructure to plug in and provide that 24/7 capability or just purely additional expertise to help them filter out those vulnerabilities and really identify the priorities that are needed to maintain that cyber posture and that secure by design principle.
Just to layer onto that, Ian, you're spot on in terms of the pressure that the security operations center, the SOC analyst, they are under significant pressure right now. Cisco did a survey of thousands of our enterprise customers and commercial customers. And the number one thing that came back through those interviews was the alert proliferation that they're seeing from on-premise, cloud, IoT is just overwhelming to the security operations center. They can't get effectively to 50% of the alerts that are coming in. There's just so much noise coming into the security operations center. The ones they get to, effectively, there's a significant number of false positives. The ones that they should be investigating, they never get time to get to. What you find is like 50% of valid alerts never get investigated. That's why, with the help of NTT, designing security operation centers that cover on-premise, they cover the emerging attack surface with IoT, they cover the cloud vendors, they cover SaaS applications. You can't have different teams looking at different ingestion of this data. You have to be able to consolidate it. You have to make it simple for the SOC analyst. That's what our teams are struggling with. And we're going to see that with these new designs with SD-WAN and designing that security into the SD-WAN estate and then thinking about how that flows into the security operations center. What does that mean to actually drive security delivery and operations? We have to think about that at the same time.
From a security operations center perspective, we help clients with the high fidelity data and threat intel. Entities fortunate to have a very large volume of backbone internet access and effectively bringing that into our threat intel through machine learning. We complement that with the security incident events and intel that comes out of Cisco to help some of the clients find those unknowns and really drive high fidelity data. It's a great combination of Cisco's awesome security technology with NTT's security services capability.
How do we bring together the various technology streams that are in play here? If we talk about threat analysis and level one, level two analysts in the SOC, we're giving them an awful lot of AI and machine learning tools. If we look at developers, we're giving them tools to help refactor and rework their code in order to reduce errors. But when we talk about network architecture, there's no use of AI, there's no use of machine learning to look at our WAN, to look at our networks, to look at our data centers, and tell us how do we get to a simpler environment. Because for all the attempts to put platforms in place and make things predictable, multi-cloud drives and coach and horses through simplicity.
I'm going to let John cover the DNAC part and other parts of his capability, but I'm going to jump on the bit that I can probably get to. From our SOC perspective, we've implemented SOAR technology, which is around orchestration automation response, which allows us to remove that L1 and L2 layer and have humans focus on the L3 layer by using a programmable infrastructure and automation approach to those initial log filtering activities or event filtering activities. I'll pause there, John, because I think that you've got the right answer for the infrastructure.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to disagree with you heavily on the enterprise AI and ML being useful built into both the networking and the security space. That's been a whole part of our build within what we call DNA Center and our software-defined networking platform, where we're using an AI, we're using ML on the networking side to drive assurance, to drive what-if analysis, to be able to look at resource planning, to look at routing decisions. We're doing the same on the security side. So we've got an offering called StealthWatch that is fully AI ML driven based on NetFlow. Effectively, we have an offering where we are looking at our networking estate. We call it encrypted traffic analysis, the ability to look at encrypted traffic on the network. And what is happening is because of TLS 1.3 and everything that's happening around encryption, the network is going dark. We have to be able to look at encrypted traffic. There's privacy issues about decrypting and then re-encrypting traffic to look at a packet. Being able to detect malware within encrypted traffic, you have to use these tools. You have to use AI and ML. And we almost have 100% detection rate of malware within encrypted traffic, and that's the direction that the market's going. We're building it into both networking to drive our networking decisions, the assurance and analytics, and we're building it into the security portfolio.
I've worked with routing tables for 20 plus years now, maybe a bit longer. One of the big issues that I was trying to understand here was the physical design. It's that interconnection between the multiple layers, such as multi-cloud, to understand how I do this better. How do I reduce a lot of that grunt work from those first-line IT support guys? How do we do the same for IT support as we've done in the SOC? Take those Tier 1, Tier 2 analysts, move them up the food chain, but give them automation they trust.
The big issue that I see right now that still exists in larger enterprise is the silos that you're talking about. We've got the IT organization, we've got the end user organization that sits within IT, we've got NetOps for network operations, we've got the security operations team, and now we've got the application, the developers, the line of business that, you know, can spin up an AWS instance. They don't want to be slowed down. We have to find a way, to your point, of using these tools to drive simplicity and integration between all these different silos to effectively feed into an ITSM tool, ServiceNow or whatever, to drive tickets and drive visibility. We need a way to communicate seamlessly between the security operations teams, the IT teams, the network teams, to drive case management, to drive remediation at speed. I've been in these SOCs, and communicating with a network team means either dropping them an IM, doing it over chat, doing it over email, picking up the phone. That's where we need to drive simplicity. One of the things that we've done at Cisco is to build a platform called SecureX, which drives that integration between security operations and the IT operations team. We can effectively share information, share the investigation, drive case management. We can drive orchestration and workflow across those two teams. We've really invested in bringing both the networking teams, the security teams, and frankly, the IT teams together through one integrated platform.
I'll just jump on a point you talked about in terms of the applications. We've talked about the sort of networking and the security controls and that convergence and some of the things around driving the programmable infrastructure. But as John pointed out, these applications are probably the weaker spot in terms of vulnerabilities in most of our organizations and clients' organizations. When we think about application development, they go through a business development, software development lifecycle, which means that they're building code, working with different environments, and getting code into a QA or a UAT release cycle. They haven't really considered some of the latest vulnerabilities that they are defending on the perimeter or on the endpoint in the developments of the applications. What is referred to as shifting left is making sure that they're taking that intelligence that they've seen on the attacks on the perimeter and endpoint, and bringing that into the software development lifecycle. We have a capability where we drive that application security vulnerability, and we bring those two together. We bring together the Cisco threat intel with the NTT's threat intel. We have a platform of application security. They can do what is called SAS, which is source static applications, security testing and dynamic, whether that's before it's a running application or after it's a running application. Basically test that application for known threats on the day that they're releasing so that they can make the patch before they actually release it. That's a bigger shift that we need to drive within the industry, is making sure we bring those two together.
How long do you think it'll be before we see the benefits? We've talked shift left from a DevOps and a DevSecOps perspective now for a good 5 years. We are finally beginning to see in those developer platforms changes in the way that we do our automated testing, changes in the way we do continuous delivery and continuous deployment. Yet when I look at the last couple of NTT security reports, the one thing that jumps out is the large number of attacks that we're seeing based on vulnerabilities that are 2, 5, 10 years old. We run the risk here of focusing solely on new apps and not actually fixing the foundations.
You're right. There's still a lot of old vulnerabilities running around because people are still bolting on technologies and bolting on security controls and bolting them onto legacy architectures and not refreshing or designing security in that architectural evolution to make sure that they make that leap forward so that they can cover themselves from the known vulnerabilities. It also plays into the fact that there's still a massive amount of noise coming through in terms of what vulnerabilities they need to focus on. and not having skills within the industry or within their organization to address them. There's still quite a large skills shortage within security, within the overall global business. We need to help upskilling everyone and bringing security to the front of everyone's mind and making everyone a student of cyber in some way.
One of the things we have seen, and one that has the potential for reducing some of our attack surface, is this increased move towards SaaS. Organizations are beginning to realize they don't need to write all this stuff themselves. They don't need to spend vast sums of money customizing the software they buy. Instead, they just configure the solution they're given. Do you see that as providing, in effect, the foundation today for the IT infrastructure of 5-10 years down the line, when we will finally get to a point where we can say we are secure by design? Or are there still things missing?
I can take that one. And I'll put it in the context of what we've seen with COVID and the remote worker, the remote working situation. That has accelerated our customers migrating their security controls to the cloud based on a SaaS platform or a cloud-delivered platform. We've seen customers move from centralized security. We've been talking about the perimeter dissolving for some time, but organizations still have a very traditional security paradigm. We've seen organizations, as a result of remote working, really accelerate what can be termed as decentralized security or, you know, zero trust. We love a good buzzword in the cybersecurity space. When you think about zero trust, it's a fundamentally different way of thinking about security. We're talking about never trust, always verify. What we've seen is a dramatic increase in the adoption and requests for our cloud-delivered SaaS-based platforms. Customers want fast time to value. They want easy implementation. Gone are the days where you're spending 6, 9, 12 months trying to implement, configure on-premise platform. With a cloud platform, fast time to value, quick implementation. You don't have the same level of customization that you can with an on-premise security stack. But you have feature velocity. Every day, every week, features are being developed and released into that platform. And with COVID, we've seen customers getting much more comfortable with cloud-delivered security. We've seen much more customers happy with non-customizable security. And we try to provide that within our SaaS platform in terms of offering different variations of service. This time to value, feature velocity, and capability velocity is really, really critical. That's where we're seeing customers migrate to these platforms.
I would just expand a little bit. If you think about within the hyperscalers, and you spin up an environment like a VNet, GCP, VCP, and they're all sort of acronyms for remote cloud environments. When you move to a cloud-based SaaS application, and I talk about an Oracle database, for example, you create an RDS instance, and I'll use AWS as an example. You actually lose a lot of visibility to what's going on with that database. You'd see the incoming and outcoming communications from your VCP environment, for example, to that database, but you lose visibility to what's actually being attacked on that database. Having the ability to have leading industry cloud security capabilities, because you're going to be moving from cloud to cloud and cloud to premise, and making sure that that's consistent across your design is critical for supporting that SaaS evolution in terms of security posture.
Let's talk about those workers at home. So far, we've talked about securing the data center, the network, how we improve the quality of apps. The problem is all those endpoints, all those workers at home own their own technology. We're not in control anymore. Today, we've seen one communications company announce it wants to push its video conferencing software onto a whole range of smart devices, which further weakens the control and management of IT teams. When we talk secure by design, how do we ensure that we can work with untrusted endpoints to ensure they don't introduce more risk into the environment?
As a result of COVID, we've effectively seen visibility on those devices has been reduced dramatically. When I talk about decentralized security and the new paradigm, we have to be thinking about security differently. We can't necessarily rely on having full visibility of the device that the individual's using. You may be using a corporate device, or bring your own device. We need to be able to look at the verification and the risk profile of the user based on their profile, based on their risk dynamics, based on the things that we know about that individual. but also in the context of the device that they're using. Being able to correlate and to have context between John as a user and the device that he's using. John is accessing a certain subset of application or trying to access a subset of applications with a jailbroken iPhone at 4 o'clock in the morning that has a risk profile that you can measure. Being able to look at what you know about that device and the hygiene that that device is, the risk profile of the user, also the application that that individual with that device is accessing, that's how we think about zero trust in the user format. That's a constant verification, constant way of looking at the risk profile and the combination of who is accessing these applications. That may be a user and access to a database. Being able to do that in real time continuously is what we're talking about. And then you start to think about then layering on where you can have visibility of those endpoints, giving you that context of the risk profile between the user and the device.
And it could just be a device from an OT or an IoT perspective and the ultimate permissions that that's got to access the application or the environment, the network environment.
You beat me to that, Simon. I was letting John set that question up for me there. If we look at what we think about identity and the end user, we still think in old school terms of people and devices. But people and devices are just a tiny fraction of the connections today into our networks. When we talk about extending security and extending trust models, how do we do that with IoT? There are millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of devices coming online on a regular basis.
Gartner predicts next year it's a million devices an hour globally from an IoT point of view, which should be connected to the internet. That's the scale of hyperconnectivity we've got going on across all devices. That's where having a very solid zero trust methodology, but also all the security controls as in design beginning around what's accessing what where and having visibility on it and having the support and skills to allow you to respond quickly to that real-time visibility is how we stay as close to zero day as possible in terms of our ability to patch and respond to the threats which could occur.
If I can layer onto that, it's knowing what's connecting to your network, but then we see far too many flat networks. We've had this concept of least privilege, that is the way to go about things. But essentially, knowing what's connecting to your network, having segmentation in place both in the network and a micro-segmentation strategy in the data center to prevent this lateral movement, to prevent an IoT device accessing something that a connected device should not be accessing. Segmentation both on the network and in the data center from a micro-segmentation perspective is critical to, if you do miss something, if you do miscategorize an asset, you know, that you're monitoring that asset, you're looking for behavioral anomalies, and you have segmentation to be able to effectively stop that device communicating and accessing information that it shouldn't be accessing.
If we look historically at the tools in cybersecurity, we've moved from point solutions to suites produced by vendors to customers rolling their own. Now, we seem to be going backwards where customers are choosing the best of breed. If we think about secure by design, how critical is it then that this is a true partnership between vendors and users, so that we don't end up recreating all those same fracture points that have existed for far too long in our security tools?
The piece that's missing there is around the actual business processes. We've got the technology, services and the people, but there's the business processes need to be considered. Some of these roll your own approaches from clients is because they're addressing a problem in terms of business process and trying to protect themselves. And whether that's I need to have a custom rule set for any sort of VPN connection that comes out of mainland China, for example, and need an alert for that. There is a lot of those custom playbooks that get generated that needs to be supported. There's technologies that you can bolt on to do them and you can customize existing. And you can ultimately leverage a service provider to help you manage all of those customizations. The SIM's there to be customized and supported from the SOC resources.
I completely agree, Simon. We have seen a move in the enterprise space of customers that have 50, 60, 70 different security technologies from the same number of vendors move to a position, to Simon's point, this is far too hard to orchestrate. The operations team can't manage these technologies. They don't talk to each other. You know, there's a lot of stitching and writing to APIs that the internal teams have to do and working with NTT to help them optimize their existing estate. we've seen customers talk about this complexity gap. So every single additional technology that you layer on to the organization drives an exponential increase in complexity for the security team.
And skills, right?
And skills. Do we have the right training of people to get up to speed? Can we operationalize it? Does it fit within the overall architecture? This complexity gap, every time you add a technology, you create more complexity. It makes it harder. So we have to think about simplicity. We are seeing enterprise customers globally and commercial customers prioritize native integration first because it allows them to rip out some of this complexity because that integration has been done by the vendor. And we thought about how things work together. We started this conversation around secure SD-WAN. That's a prime example. You can drive auto-provisioning of the security capabilities from the networking platform, or you can auto-register for the security capabilities from the networking platform, or help the networking team with routing decisions from the security platform. Having that bi-directional integration rips out a significant amount of complexity that these teams are dealing with. That's what we've seen. Like customers really like, how can you help me rip out complexity, either via services and optimization services and managed services that NTT Security provide, or through this platform-first approach that's designed to take this complexity out of the system.
If we look at disruption, cloud has massively disrupted our traditional IT data centers. SaaS applications have disrupted what's going on in terms of our software design. At what point do services provide that final disruption and effectively become the foundation to make secure by design an automatic rather than something people are still trying to do themselves?
Wow, what a question. The natural evolution of all of the security controls, you've got a mixture of cloud-to-cloud capability now disrupting traditional data center type access and basically remote deployed controls for security across not just the branches or the HQs and the remote workers. You are starting to see a point where distributed workforces and skills are having to be stitched together. That's where service providers and managed security service providers start to create some of that glue that is necessary to stitch together the complexity, but also drive towards a simplification, stitch together the business processes, and ultimately drive a consolidation of what is technology to do all in one box, so to speak. You can get your secure access service edge, and you can get your SD-WAN, your firewall, your IPS, and everything else, and you can manage that, as John said, bidirectionally from a networking team through to a security team. It's a click and add on security, and ultimately have that supported in a managed way.
Thank you both for talking with me today.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ian, for some very insightful questions. Really, really, really great.